August 12, 2003, 16-year-old Martha Puebla was fatally shot outside her home in Sun Valley, California, on the outskirts of Los Angeles. Soon, suspicion turned to Juan Catalan. Here's NBC News.
It begins in 2003 when Catalan was arrested for murdering a 16-year-old girl.
And I think that I was speechless for like 5 minutes.
A witness claimed he was at the scene of the shooting, but Catalan was actually at an LA Dodgers game. He just had to prove it.
But how could Catalan prove that he was at the baseball game at the exact moment that Puebla was being murdered? Turned out there was a twist you might expect to see only in Hollywood. As fate would have it, Larry David was filming an episode of his TV show Curb Your Enthusiasm on the exact same day that Catalan was in attendance. It's the episode in which Larry David picks up a sex worker so he can drive in the carpool lane to beat the LA traffic and get to the game on time. And after combing through hours of Dodger Stadium footage, Catalan's attorney finally struck Peter.
And we were watching tape after tape after tape, and finally he showed up on tape number 5.
And when you saw that, what did you think?
Well, I jumped out of my chair and I pointed at the screen and I said, that's him, roll that back.
But while this might seem like an ending you can only get in Hollywood, we may be mere weeks away from a similar fairy tale ending on the streets of Philadelphia. Hi, this is Colin Miller. I'm an associate dean and professor at the University of South Carolina School of Law, and I blog at Evidence Prof Blog. Today's special episode is The Alibi. It concerns the case of Pedro Reynoso, who is in prison serving a life sentence for a double homicide in 1991 that he insists he did not commit. And in less than 2 weeks, Reynoso may finally be a free man after a hearing before the Pennsylvania Board of Pardons. This is his story. On July 23, 1991, Carlos Torres and Charles Rivera were fatally shot in Philadelphia. There's uncertainty as to exactly what went down, but Pedro Reynoso's current attorney, Craig Cooley, provides the broad brushstrokes.
Torres and Rivera, there was some sort of argument between somebody. And that's the big question, is there was definitely an argument between Torres and Rivera. Torres and Rivera argued with somebody. That somebody, the state wants you to believe, is Pedro. And then shortly thereafter, 10, 15 minutes later, there comes a car down the road that pulls up alongside the car that Torres and Rivera were in, just unloads a series of shots into the car, killing both.
Eventually, police identified two primary eyewitnesses, Sarah Robinson and Sam Wilkerson, who respectively identified Reynoso and his alleged accomplice, Felo Garcia, as the two men involved in the shooting. And so, almost 3 years after the shooting, Pedro Reynoso was arrested on March 23, 1994, after his flight from the Dominican Republic arrived in Newark Airport. Here's Reynoso's wife, Evelyn, whom he married earlier this year.
When they arrested him, he was like, well, this has got to be a misunderstanding. So he was fine. He just signed his own extradition. Like, we'll fix this out, but I didn't kill anybody. There you go, 26 years in prison.
When questioned about the double homicide by an INS agent upon arriving from the Dominican Republic, Reynoso explained that his home country was also where he'd been at the time of the murders. According to Reynoso, he'd been in the Dominican Republic on July 23, 1991, as part of a two-week trip. And Reynoso had good reason to remember that trip. Again, here's his wife, Evelyn.
Totally different, but everybody knew he was not in the country. He had left the Dominican Republic because his mother was dying.
At trial, Reynoso's attorney would support this alibi with two alibi witnesses. Martha Alamonte was a friend of Reynoso who said she flew into the Dominican Republic on the same flight as Reynoso, her husband, and Father Ramon Alejo de la Cruz on July 13, 1991. And she had the passport stamp to prove it. Alamonte testified that Reynoso and she were from the same small town of Pimentel in the Dominican Republic, and that she saw Reynoso every day of his trip, including July 23rd, the day of the Philadelphia murders, because she was constantly visiting Reynoso's sick mother. The second alibi witness was Father Ramon Alejo de la Cruz, who confirmed that he was on the same flight as Alamonte, her husband, and Reynoso on July 13th. De la Cruz also testified that he saw Reynoso throughout his visit to the Dominican Republic, including on July 19th, when Reynoso and his wife asked him to baptize their son, Juan Alexander. The jury's decision to convict Reynoso despite De La Cruz's testimony causes Craig Cooley particular chagrin.
So, most people would think carries a significant amount of credibility because they take a vow to be truthful and work in God's favor. And unfortunately, the jury just believed Wilkerson and Robinson.
I love Bull & Branch sheets because I need sleep, I never used to get enough sleep, and Bull & Branch sheets have helped me get the best sleep of my life. They're the softest and most comfortable sheets in the world, and the only bedding loved by three U.S. presidents and all three hosts of Undisclosed. And now, for a limited time, you can get their luxury flannel bedding to keep you cool sleepers warm, and because they breathe, keep you warm sleepers cool. Shipping is always free, and you can try them out for 30 nights risk-free. And right now, you get $50 off your first set of sheets at bowlandbranch.com with promo code undisclosed. Again, that's $50 off at bowlandbranch.com, promo code undisclosed. Spelled B-O-L-L and branch.com, code undisclosed. So, what do those eyewitnesses say? Sam Wilkerson identified Phaelo Garcia as one of the men involved in the shooting and testified at his murder trial. But then, at Pedro Reynoso's murder trial, something odd happened. Initially on the witness stand, Wilkerson repeatedly testified that he could not identify Reynoso as one of the men involved in the shooting. He also testified that he had not made a previous identification of Reynoso. Eventually, the jury was excused, and outside their presence, Wilkerson said he could identify Reynoso, but that he didn't want to make an in-court identification because he didn't want anything to happen to his brother or him. Wilkerson, though, admitted that no one had threatened him in connection with his trial testimony. But according to Wilkerson, while there wasn't a threat, there was a prior bribe, and this leads to an inconvenient truth for the state in this case. Back on April 1, 1992, Wilkerson took part in his first lineup in the case and picked out the two men he claimed were involved in the shooting. Those two men, however, were not Garcia and Reynoso. Wilkerson tried to explain this away at trial.
Wilkerson gave this testimony that while he was at the police department, two Dominicans walk in off the street into the police department and into this room he was viewing these people in and bribed him. not to identify Phaelo Garcia. And so you would have to believe that two people from the street could just wander into a Philadelphia police department station and somehow get into said viewing room and bribe him with no one seeing these two men approach him.
And there were other problems with Wilkerson, including the inconsistencies in his testimony at the trials of Phaelo Garcia and Pedro Reynoso. Who shot the victim? Was there one gun or were there two guns? And was there a third person in the car? It should come as no surprise that on November 21st, 2011, Wilkerson recanted his trial testimony and named a third man as the actual shooter. Wilkerson's recantation was actually the second recantation in this case. The first recantation was by Sarah Robinson, the other eyewitness, who also named a third man as the actual shooter. Again, this recantation was unsurprising given the inconsistencies in Robinson's story. Her narrative of the shooting changed, as did the identity of the shooter. And then there's her identification of Reynoso.
Yeah, I believe they interviewed Sarah the first time on July 26th. So the shooting happens on July 23rd. They interview Sarah on July 26th. And if you read the report, she identifies somebody. Right? So she makes an identification, meaning they presented her with a photograph. Right? Now, at trial, they want you to believe that photograph is of Pedro Reynoso. But here's the problem. About a month after she's interviewed, two new detectives are on the case. And they wrote a report indicating they don't have a picture of Pedro Reynoso to put it like a wanted sign up around town, like this guy's wanted for murder. They don't have a picture of him. That's problematic, right? They showed a photograph of Pedro Reynoso to Sarah Robinson on July 26, 1991. They would have a picture of him, right? But Pedro doesn't have a criminal record, didn't have, I mean, he was a He moved to the United States, I believe, in 1988. So he'd only been there a couple of years. So the question is, whose picture did they show Sarah Robinson on July 26, 1991, that she made that identification? And again, these reports that I came across in the age file were not disclosed at the trial.
It's still unclear who Sarah Robinson first identified. But one thing about the identification is crystal clear. Robinson said the shooter did not have a mustache. Again, here's Evelyn Reynoso.
People are seeing Pedro without a mustache. And if you see pictures that I have here back in 1981, he had the paintbrush mustache that they used to use back in the day.
Now, in a prior season, we raised the question of whether an eyewitness could fail to notice that a murderer had a mouthful of gold teeth. And while that failure might seem to be improbable, the failure to notice a big paintbrush mustache would seem to be impossible. But do we know that Reynoso had this mustache on July 23rd, the day of the murders? We do, but the jury didn't. Remember how we mentioned that Reynoso and his wife asked Father Ramon Alejo de la Cruz to baptize their son? Well, de la Cruz had a busy schedule and insufficient prep time, so he was unable to perform that baptism. But another priest was. We know this because we had the baptism certificate indicating that Reynoso's son, Juan Alexander, was baptized in Pimentel on July 27, 1991, just 4 days after the murders that Robinson says she witnessed. Again, here's Craig Cooley.
And the photographs are critical because, according to Sarah Robinson, the gunman did not have a mustache on July 23rd when the shooting occurred. And on July 27th, Pedro Reynoso has a full-blown mustache. And again, I can grow hair on my face pretty quickly, but I cannot grow a full-blown mustache in 4 days.
Yeah.
So that was significant, too, is the fact that you take Sarah Robinson's description that the gunman has no mustache, and then you look at the photo on July 27th, that by itself could be enough to exonerate him.
My father turns 79 years old in 1 week, and of course every year I love celebrating his birthday, but it does get a little harder and harder to figure out what to get him. I usually default to some kind of technical gadget or a sweater or socks because he's always cold. This year I found the perfect thing to give him and I can't wait, and that is the Ember Wave. The Ember Wave is the first bracelet that helps you feel colder or warmer at the press of a button. It's like having your own little personal heater or cooler right on your wrist. Now, I know that sounds kind of like, how do they make that work? But here's what it is. Science shows that warming or cooling sensitive areas of your body, like your wrist, improves your overall comfort. Imagine like when you come in from the freezing cold and you wrap your hands around a hot mug of coffee or put your hands under some warm water. It's kind of the same thing. So the Ember Wave cools or warms your wrist with precisely engineered thermal waves. I have an Ember Wave, and believe me, I am that person where my hands and feet are constantly cold. My husband, on the other hand, is always a hot, sweaty mess. So this device helps us both keep the peace because I keep my Ember Wave on, I press a little button, and I instantly feel 5 degrees more comfortable in minutes. And I can take it anywhere. It can be in the car, it can be at work. You don't have to freeze anymore in your cubicle, and you don't have to beg HR to let you have a space heater because, well, they probably won't. So the Ember Wave is the answer to all of your temperature discomfort prayers. It was invented by three MIT scientists, and it was named one of Time Magazine's best inventions of 2018. It's been reviewed by a number of leading technical publications like Wired, Fast Company, GMA, and it's been reviewed by me because I love it. So check out the Ember Wave today for yourself or somebody you love. It is cold. This is the time to get it. Our listeners get $50 off for the holidays if they go to emberwave.com/undisclosed. That's emberwave.com/undisclosed for $50 off your purchase.
Unfortunately, trial counsel didn't introduce either the baptism certificate or the baptism photos at trial. And that's critical because here was the state's argument at trial. Pedro Reynoso had a passport with two stamps, one showing him entering the Dominican Republic on July 13, 1991, and one showing him exiting the Dominican Republic on July 27, 1991, after his son's baptism. The state didn't dispute the authenticity of the July 13 stamp, but it claimed the July 27 stamp was a counterfeit. They called an INS agent who testified as much, although she admitted first that the INS didn't have an exemplar of the passport stamp used in the Dominican Republic in 1991, and second, that she didn't contact Dominican officials to make a comparison. It's tough to make heads or tails out of why the INS agent thought the July 27 stamp was counterfeit, but the baptism certificate and photos should make this all academic, because that evidence clearly establishes that Pedro Reynoso was in the Dominican Republic on July 27th, there would have been no need to fabricate a passport stamp on that date. And while the baptism certificate and photos were not introduced at trial, there was testimony about the baptism. While Father De La Cruz couldn't perform the baptism, he was able to attend the baptism and testified at trial that Reynoso was in Pimentel at the baptism on July 27th. And so, that left the state arguing that Reynoso must have entered the Dominican Republic on July 13th, returned to the U.S. before the double homicide on July 23rd, and then returned to the Dominican Republic in time for his son's baptism 4 days later. But then, how are there no stamps on Reynoso's passport between July 13th and July 27th?
Yeah.
Believe the state narrative. You have to believe he's like James Bond. Get in and out of two countries with no documentation.
Right.
Of him entering or exiting, right?
There's also additional evidence that the jury didn't hear at trial that makes the state's 007 theory more difficult to swallow. Let's start with the land contract. On July 17th, 1991, Pedro Reynoso bought a piece of land in Pimentel, and we have a copy of the contract. This is doubly important because there's another alibi witness that trial counsel didn't call at trial. Ernesto Ramon was Reynoso's father-in-law and gave a statement that he saw his son-in-law at his newly purchased land on July 23rd, the very same day of the double homicide.
That seems to me like the biggest piece of evidence here. Is that something that you see as pretty important?
No, I agree. Again, had trial counsel presented that, had trial counsel really done a day-by-day accounting of Pedro's whereabouts, you, in order to buy the state narrative, you have to think, you must think that Pedro left, went back to Philadelphia sometime after the 17th, right?
Right.
And then committed the murder on July 23rd, and then came back to the Dominican, all the while having no passport stamps, either entering the U.S.
Right.
On its return date to commit the murder, and then returning to the Dominican once said murder was committed.
Reynoso's current attorney, Craig Cooley, likes to talk about this day-to-day accounting of where Reynoso was during his trip to the Dominican Republic. And that's because there were additional alibi witnesses beyond the three we've mentioned so far. Eunice de la Rosa Cabreja is Reynoso's son's godmother, and she said that she's certain she saw Reynoso in Pimentel on July 23rd. Dr. Jose Javier Bueno, a neighbor to the Reynoso family in Pimentel, has said the same thing. So has Angel Maria Rondon, Reynoso's brother-in-law. In total, there are 10 alibi witnesses, two who testified at trial and eight who were not called by trial counsel, all of whom placed Reynoso in the Dominican Republic on the very same day of the murders. And as Craig Cooley notes, all 10 alibi witnesses were known to trial counsel.
But at the same time, trial counsel probably could have presented and should have presented all 10 witnesses so they really hammer home, like, what days, what time. Trial counsel didn't introduce the land contract. Trial counsel didn't introduce the... they talked about baptism, but they didn't introduce the baptism certificate, which is dated the 27th, the photographs.
And so, that's largely the long and short of this case. Pedro Reynoso had 10 alibi witnesses and several alibi documents all establishing he was in the Dominican Republic at the time of the Philadelphia murders. But trial counsel only called two alibi witnesses and didn't introduce any alibi documents at trial. Meanwhile, the prosecution had two eyewitnesses who gave contradictory statements, but who were enough to secure Reynoso's conviction. Subsequently, however, both eyewitnesses, as we noted, have recanted and said a third man was the shooter. And they're not alone. Marisol Colon Torres, the sister of one of the victims, Carlos Torres, has also now implicated the same third man as the shooter. According to Colon Torres, on July 23, 1991, she was in her North Philadelphia home when a Dominican drug dealer from the neighborhood she knew as Chuito came looking for her brother. Later that day, her kids ran up to her and said something had happened to their uncle. Colon Torres then ran down the street and found her brother and Charles Rivera, who had both been shot. The victims were taken to Temple University Hospital, where Marisol Torres was later told that her brother was dead as she stood in bare feet on the cold tile floor, having lost her shoes in her haste. Then, upon returning home, Marisol Torres again saw Chuito.
Yeah, no, she described Chuito coming to her house saying that he did her a favor by killing her brother and Rivera. And that's, she gave an affidavit, too. She, again, Pedro's second piece trade attorney was not very good, and he's, in fact, serving a federal prison sentence right now for drug conspiracy. I think he's been in prison the last 2 years. But needless to say, Michael Farrell, again, had two affidavits from Marisol and her husband, Jose, attesting to the events that went down on July 23rd. And both identify Chuito as the gunman. And Farrell just, I think he waited more than a year to file their affidavits, so they were both untimely.
But it's not just PCR accounts who failed Reynoso and Marisol Torres. According to Marisol Torres, she told the police about Chuito's confession soon after the shooting, but was ignored. She chalks it up to the fact that she didn't speak much English at the time, making her easy to ignore. Reynoso's wife also thinks the language gap has contributed to the inertia in this case.
And I think the case didn't get resolved a lot faster than it would because of the deficiency in the English with the family and not knowing how to move around.
And it's not just Marisol Torres and the two original eyewitnesses, Wilkerson and Robinson, who have identified Chuito as the shooter. And we also now have more than just the nickname Chuito.
And then the final piece of this puzzle is we have five people in this case, as you note in your petition, that have identified someone else as the actual gunman in this case, right?
Yeah, Chuito. Rafael Vidal. I don't know if that's how you say it, but that's Rafael, V-I-D-A-L, I believe, is how you spell his name. And my, according to Pedro, I think he passed away last year in the Dominican Republic, according to Pedro.
Okay.
I have neither confirmed or I have not confirmed that, but that, I mean, according to Pedro and his family, they're pretty adamant that Chuito is no longer living.
I love giving gifts, but not just like generic gifts. I love giving particular gifts, like specific gifts that when you give it to somebody you love and they open it, they're like, wow, you really thought about me. And that's why I love Uncommon Goods. This website has amazing, unique, fun, beautiful things for, well, for you, for gift giving, for your home, for your office, for your garden. And that's because the Uncommon Goods team scours the entire globe looking for the most unique creative things they can find. These are items you really can't find anywhere else. And I'll give you an example. I got a couple of things for my little one, my 2.5-year-old. He's like 2.5 going on linebacker. He's a big boy, but he likes to sit up on the counter, on the table where all of us eat. He's like, I'm done with the high chair. But to keep him sitting still while we're having dinner, I got this really cool tablecloth that actually is a map of the United States, and it comes with a set of washable markers so my kids can color, and my 11-year-old, as she's coloring this map, she gets to learn where all the states are, what the capitals are, what the flowers and state birds and plants and all those things are. And my 2.5-year-old has a reason to sit still. My kids love it. And you can wash it over and over again because the markers are washable. So it's one of the like most fun like kind of family activity things that I've found this year. And that's just one of the many Uncommon Goods on the Uncommon Goods website that you will find that you and your loved ones will love. And for every single purchase you make on Uncommon Goods, they donate $1. And they've given away more than $2 million to nonprofit organizations like RAIN, which is the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network, and the IRC, the International Rescue Committee. Uncommon Goods support good causes like paid family leave, a fair living wage. They do not sell products made with fur, feathers, or leather, and they support small businesses and local artists. You will love the things you're going to get from uncommongoods.com, and you'll feel good about it. Uncommon Goods wants to help you discover your new favorite thing, so they're offering our listeners an exclusive deal on your first purchase. Just go to uncommongoods.com/undisclosed and get $5 off your first purchase. That's uncommongoods.com/undisclosed to receive $5 off your first purchase.
But despite all the evidence of Reynoso's innocence, and despite all the evidence of Chuito's guilt, much of it known for years, Reynoso has been incarcerated for the past 23 years, recently surviving a fight with colon cancer. Again, here's his wife, Evelyn.
The finding of innocence is true because the VA is not proceeding and he is innocent. It would be very unfair for him to be convicted of a crime and there's somebody out here that really did the crime that everybody knows it was him. And
right.
He lost his whole life in there.
Right.
He lost his baby mother, and like his kid's mother died, and they had, and she had cancer, and them kids were raised by themselves. I mean, this man is really hurt. He couldn't even raise his kids. But on the deficiency English, that he doesn't have a lot. Now he knows a little bit from blocks in there, but he doesn't know a lot. He did as much as he could do. That Innocent Project picked up his case, and Cooley picked up his case. But ever since I came into the picture, since August of last year, I've been on top.
Mm-hmm.
So it's being known a lot. I mean, this case sat on somebody's desk for years.
Right.
And nothing was done. His sister doesn't know any English. She's crippled. She's handicapped. I mean, she's going there. She's going to be there. I'm going to try to prepare her for a testimony if she wants to speak. She doesn't speak any English. She's been here for 30-something years. Doesn't speak any English at all.
The hearing that Evelyn is referencing is the one I mentioned at the top of the episode. On December 20th, Reynoso has a hearing before the Pennsylvania Board of Pardons. That hearing is the result of the groundbreaking decision by Pennsylvania Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman to appoint two former inmates to the Board of Pardons. Here's a clip from KYW News Radio.
Former life sentence inmates started jobs today with the Pennsylvania Board of Pardons. As KYW Community Affairs reporter Terry Gregg explains, they'll be working to help reform the Commonwealth's process for commuting sentences.
It is a bit surreal, but in the same fashion, it really just seems right.
53-year-old George Trudell did 3 decades of a mandatory life without parole sentence. His co-defendant, who did the killing, only served 7 years. A former contractor, Trudell went to college in prison and studied criminal justice. His sentence was commuted in May, and now he'll work as a commutation specialist.
It is actually something I know very well, and it's just a comfortable fit. It feels right.
I really thought that Muncie was going to be my cemetery.
At 69 years young, former blues singer Naomi Blunt served 37 years of a life sentence. After 5 tries, her sentence was commuted in July.
I feel wonderful knowing that I can give something back.
Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman says the duo will reform commutation and mentor inmates through the process.
We need to make sure that we give everybody an opportunity at a second chance.
George Trudell was incarcerated with Pedro Reynoso, and he informed Fetterman that he thought Reynoso was innocent. And so, here we are, less than 2 weeks away from a ruling that could set Reynoso free. At that December 20th hearing, there are 3 likely outcomes. No relief, a pardon based upon a finding of innocence, or a commutation of sentence. And in terms of those latter 2 options, there are significant differences. Again, here's Craig Cooley.
Yeah, pardon and commutation. And if he's commuted, obviously he'd be paroled. And I think he would have, he's going to be deported. I mean, he knows that. I just don't know when. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when, because if we don't get the conviction vacated entirely. A double murder is an aggravated felony under the immigration laws, and he's going to be highlighted pretty quickly, I think.
And so, like Juan Catalan, will Pedro Reynoso have his Hollywood ending of an alibi clearing him of a murder? Or Will he be deported to the Dominican Republic? Or will he remain in prison, likely until the end of his life? We should know the answers to these questions soon, and once we know, we'll let you know. Thanks for listening to this special episode of Undisclosed. We might see you one more time in 2019, but if not, have a happy new year. And we'll have a whole new slate of cases to present and people to meet in 2020.